I shall go down the track to a telephone, she continued, her voice clear and as cold as the moonlight. There are emergency telephones at intervals of 5 miles along the right-of-way. I shall call for another crew to be sent here. This will take some time. You will please stay aboard and maintain such order as you are capable of maintaining.
What about the gangs of raiders?
Asked another woman's nervous voice. That's true, said Dagny. I'd better have someone to accompany me. Who wishes to go? She had misunderstood the woman's motive. There was no answer. There were no glances directed at her or at one another. There were no eyes, only moist ovals glistening in the moonlight. There they were, she thought, the men of the new age, the demanders and recipients of self-sacrifice. She was struck by a quality of anger in their silence, an anger saying that she was supposed to spare them moments such as this, and with a feeling of cruelty new to her. She remained silent by conscious intention. She noticed that Owen Kellogg, too, was waiting. But he was not watching the passengers. He was watching her face. When he became certain that there would be no answer from the crowd, he said quietly, I'll go with you, of course, Miss Taggart. Thank you.
What about us? Snapped the nervous woman.
Dagny turned to her, answering in the formal, inflectionless monotone of a business executive. There have been no cases of raider gang attacks upon frozen trains, unfortunately.
Just where are we?
Asked a bulky man with too expensive an overcoat and too flabby a face. His voice had a tone intended for servants, by a man unfit to employ them.
In what part of what state?
I don't know, she answered.
How long will we be kept here?
Asked another, in the tone of a creditor who is imposed upon by a debtor. I don't know.
When will we get to San Francisco?
Asked a third, in the manner of a sheriff addressing a suspect. I don't know. The demanding resentment was breaking loose in small crackling puffs, like chestnuts popping open in the dark oven of the mines, who now felt certain that they were taken care of and safe.
This is perfectly outrageous,
yelled a woman, springing forward, throwing her words at Dagny's face.
You have no right to let this happen. I don't intend to be kept waiting in the middle of nowhere. I expect transportation.
Keep your mouth shut, said Dagny. Or I'll lock the train doors and leave you where you are.
You can't do that. You're a common carrier. You have no right to discriminate against me. I'll report it to the Unification Board.
If I give you a train to get you within sight or hearing of your board, said Dagny, turning away. She saw Kellogg looking at her, his glance like a line drawn under her words, underscoring them for her own attention. Get a flashlight somewhere, she said, while I go to get my handbag. Then we'll start. When they started out on their way to the track phone, walking past the silent line of cars, they saw another figure descending from the train and hurrying to meet them. She recognized the tramp.
Trouble, ma'am?
He asked, stopping.
The crew is deserted.
Oh.
What's to be done?
I'm going to a phone to call the division point.
You can't go alone, ma'am. Not these days. I'd better go with you.
She smiled. Thanks, but I'll be all right. Mr. Kellogg here is going with me. Say, what's your name?
Jeff Allen, ma'am.
Listen, Allen, have you ever worked for a railroad?
No, ma'am.
Well, you're working for one now. You're a deputy conductor and proxy vice president in charge of operation. Your job is to take charge of this train in my absence, to preserve order, and to keep the cattle from stampeding. Tell them that I appointed you. You don't need any proof. They'll obey anybody who expects obedience.
Yes, ma'am, he answered firmly,
with a look of understanding. She remembered that money inside a man's pocket had the power to turn into confidence inside his mind. She took a $100 bill from her bag and slipped it into his hand. An advance on wages, she said.
Yes, ma'am.
She had started off when he called after her.
Miss Taggart.
She turned. Yes?
Thank you, he said.
She smiled, half raised her hand in a parting salute, and walked on.
Who is that? Asked Kellogg.
A tramp who was caught stealing a ride.
He'll do the job, I think.
He will. They walked silently past the engine, and on in the direction of its headlight, at first stepping from tie to tie with the violent light beating against them from behind. They still felt as if they were at home in the normal realm of a railroad. Then she found herself watching the light on the ties under her feet, watching it ebb slowly, trying to hold it, to keep seeing its fading glow until she knew that the hint of a glow on the wood was no longer anything but moonlight. She could not prevent the shudder that made her turn to look back. The headlight still hung behind them like the liquid silver globe of a planet, deceptively close, but belonging to another orbit and another system. Owen Kellogg walked silently beside her, and she felt certain that they knew each other's thoughts. He couldn't have. Oh, God, he couldn't, she said suddenly, not realizing that she had switched to words. Who? Nathaniel Taggart. He couldn't have worked with people like those passengers. He couldn't have run trains for them. He couldn't have employed them. He couldn't have used them at all, neither as customers nor as workers. Kellogg smiled. You mean that he couldn't have grown rich by exploiting them, Miss Taggart? She nodded. They, she said, and he heard the faint trembling of her voice, which was love and pain and indignation. They've said for years that he rose by thwarting the ability of others, by leaving them no chance, and that human incompetence was to his selfish interest. But he... It wasn't obedience that he required of people. Miss Taggart, he said, with an odd note of sternness in his voice, just remember that he represented a code of existence which, for a brief span in all human history, drove slavery out of the civilized world. Remember it when you feel baffled by the nature of his enemies. Have you ever heard of a woman named Ivy Starnes? Oh, yes. I keep thinking that this was what she would have enjoyed, the spectacle of those passengers tonight. This was what she's after. But we can't live with it, you and I, can we? No one can live with it. It's not possible to live with it. What makes you think that Ivy Starnes' purpose is life? Somewhere on the edge of her mind, like the wisps she saw floating on the edges of the prairie, neither quite rays, nor fog, nor cloud, she felt some shape which she could not grasp, half suggested and demanding to be grasped. She did not speak, and like the links of a chain unrolling through their silence, the rhythm of their steps went on, spaced to the ties, scored by the dry, swift beat of heels on wood. She had not had time to be aware of him, except as of a providential comrade in competence. Now she glanced at him with conscious attention. His face had the clear, hard look she remembered having liked in the past, but the face had grown calmer, as if more serenely at peace. His clothes were threadbare. He wore an old leather jacket, and even in the darkness she could distinguish the scuffed blotches streaking across the leather. "What have you been doing since you left Taggart Transcontinental?" she asked. "Oh, many things. Where are you working now? On special assignments, more or less. Of what kind?" "Of every kind. You're not working for a railroad?" "No." The sharp brevity of the sound seemed to expand it into an eloquent statement. She knew that he knew her motive. "Kellogg, if I told you that I don't have a single first-rate man left on the Taggart system, if I offered you any job, any terms, any money you cared to name, would you come back to us?" "No." "You were shocked by our loss of traffic. I don't think you have any idea of what our loss of men has done to us. I can't tell you the sort of agony I went through 3 days ago trying to find somebody able to build 5 miles of temporary track. I have 50 miles to build through the Rockies. I see no way to do it. But it has to be done. I've combed the country for men. There aren't any. And then to run into you suddenly, to find you here in a day coach, when I'd give half the system for one employee like you. Do you understand why I can't let you go? Choose anything you wish. Want to be general manager of a region? Or assistant operating vice president? No. You're still working for a living, aren't you? Yes. You don't seem to be making very much. I'm making enough for my needs, and for nobody else's. Why are you willing to work for anyone but Taggart Transcontinental? Because you wouldn't give me the kind of job I'd want.
I?
She stopped still.
Good God, Kellogg, haven't you understood? I'd give you any job you name.
All right, track walker.
What?
Section hand. Engine wiper. He smiled at the look on her face.
No? You see, I said you wouldn't.
Do you mean that you'd take a day laborer's job?
Anytime you offered it.
But nothing better?
That's right, nothing better. Don't you understand that I have too many men who are able to do those jobs, but nothing better?
I understand it, Miss Taggart.
Do you?
What I need is your
mind, Miss Taggart. My mind is not on the market any longer.
She stood looking at him, her face growing harder. You're one of them, aren't you? She said at last.
Of whom?
She did not answer, shrugged, and went on.
Miss Taggart, he asked, how long will you remain willing to be a common carrier?
I won't surrender the world to the creature you're quoting.
The answer you gave her was much more realistic.